Or background music for the Wisconsin State Legislature. Either or.
I knew you were going to have some kind of snide comment. This is not a political segment,
Steve.
Oh,
sorry.
Is spring here?
Yes, it's spring.
It is spring. Mm-hmm. Summer is coming. It's when Wisconsin comes alive. And the nerd in me is always very excited to experience some of the nerdier historical fun things that we have here in our state.
Is it nerdier or cool?
I embrace the word
nerdy. I think
nerdy.
It's cool.
I think nerdy is a good thing. But I think it is sometimes, you know, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah. So, one of those places is Circus World, which is a national historic landmark located in Baraboo, Wisconsin. And starting on April 21st, they have a pretty exciting attraction that is returning after 12 years. So Pete Schrake, who's an archivist with Circus World Museum, is joining us now. Welcome to the show, Pete.
Hello, thank you.
So I guess what, in your mind, as someone who works at this Circus World Museum, what is it about the circus that still captivates people's imagination and interest?
Well, I think the fact that it is just, it's so many different things. I mean we work with historians and fans and the general public here. So, you know, people of all walks come to the museum, and all of them see a little bit of something in this unique art form that appeals to them. If you're into, you know, kind of high energetic performance, you know, then the live acts are for you. Everything from the trapeze, or like last year we had the human cannibal act, or the clowning. If you're into kind of the nuts and bolts logistics of how a show moved from town to town, things like the wagons or just the mechanics of a circus appeal to people. The wagons themselves are a form of folk art. The imagery. The posters are just vibrant and kind of splash at you. And there's just a little bit of everything. There's stuff for kids. There's stuff for adults. It's one of those historic as well as contemporary art forms that just has an incredibly broad appeal. And I think that's why it still works today, and that's why folks come out to Circus World to check it out.
You still have those cool train cars that were in the parades of yesteryear?
We do. We have well over 30 historic railroad cars
Wow.
in our museum. About Wow. 8 or 9 of them are on display on our museum grounds, including a clown car, which is where the Ringling clowns lived when they were on the train, you know, that on especially that last train. So we have a genuine clown railroad car, but we've got coach cars and animal cars and flat cars, and many of them were indeed used during those years of the Great Circus Parade.
So those are the train cars, but coming as of April 21st are the wagons, right?
The wagons are already here.
Okay.
And yes, we are exceptionally excited for that. So there are 4 wagons, and they are on loan to us from Feld Entertainment. And this is the Feld family and their company that still own the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus today and still have it on the road. And wonderful people, warm people, just very nice people, have a lot of just their own family memorabilia. The Feld family purchased the Ringling show from John Ringling North back in the late 60s. And so they're the only, you know, they're basically the second owners of the brand. And they've owned it now for well over 50 years. Anyway, they own the wagons, and they're loaning them to us. And amongst them is the Bell Wagon, which is really very symbolic of Wisconsin and the circus.
It's a one-of, right?
Yeah. And it was made here, right?
Yeah,
it was made in Baraboo. So Baraboo had a number of circuses in its time, but the Ringlings being the big ones, and their cousins, the Molars, made wagons. And so the Molars made it for the Ringlings, and the bells on them were cast in a foundry in Milwaukee, and it was used, you know, and came out of Baraboo for the show for many, many, many years. You know, there were over 100 circuses from Baraboo at one time or another. So, I mean, really a big part of our state's history. And if there's a piece that really represents that history as a performance piece, as a display piece, you name it, you know, the logistics side of it, that Bell Wagon really is it. So for us to have that here is just incredibly exciting.
And is it just for this summer, or how long do we have it for?
We have it on loan for, I believe it is, and I'm going to get the terms wrong, but like I believe it's 5 years, and then it can automatically renew. And so it'll be here for a number of years.
Very cool.
And again, the Feld family are wonderful folks. They're very supportive of us. And so just very excited that we're able to make this happen.
All right. Well, I'm adding it to my list of things to do this summer. So thanks so much for joining us, Pete.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Pete Trake is a archivist at the Circus World Museum in Baraboo, Wisconsin. And when we come back, some other Wisconsin history in the form of an old tavern that has been renovated. So we will talk about that after this.
But I'm pretty good at drinking beer.
All right, well, circuses might be part of our state history, but also part of our state history, beer.
Actually, the present day.
And present day. So a couple years back, I had the opportunity to go check out the beer and brewing experience at Old World, Wisconsin. It was very cool. You can see, and it's still there, you can see how they used to make beer, which is not so dissimilar, except that now it's a much bigger, thing. But when I was there, I remember seeing the outside of a tavern that they had excavated and were renovating as like the next phase of this beer and brewing experience. So it's done now. And as of May 17th, you can go see it. So joining us now is Rob Novak of Old World, Wisconsin, who is the beer and brewing historian. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Hi, Kristen. Thank you.
So before we get to the tavern, can you just tell us a little bit more about the brewing experience at Old World, Wisconsin that I was talking about?
Yeah, so we have evolved since your visit. This will be our fourth season brewing. We brew every day that we're open in our brew house, which is essentially a really fancy barn. And that is the first step into exploring Wisconsin's beer history. And now we've been able to get the tavern ready, which will be the next step.
So describe this tavern experience to me. What it's going to be like? What do we expect to see there? What are we going to drink together?
Well, we have the first thing you're going to experience is sort of walking into the past. So we've designed the tavern to look how it looked in the 1930s. This building was built in the early 1900s, but we aimed for the period right after Prohibition ended. So you're going to walk into the 1930s, 1934, and we're going to have a post-Prohibition lager on draft that we brewed with Foxtown Brewing in Mequon to try to target the flavors and ingredients that were used in that era. So you'll be able to order one of those, have some Landjäger, which is a traditional German sausage snack that was very popular in taverns, and just kind of soak in the ambiance of the 1930s.
You glossed over that sausage thing. I want to know more about this. That intrigued me as a fan of the sausage industry. And
oh, gosh.
What's that? What's in that thing?
Our history. A Landjäger is a beef or pork sausage. They're small. They come in pairs. They're kind of a dry sausage, so hunters could take them with them in their pockets.
Oh, yeah.
And they're delicious. So you'll see them hanging up in these little chalets.
Oh, I gotcha now.
State.
I gotcha.
Yeah.
I love that.
So,
yeah,
Rob, they are delicious.
Where was the tavern originally from? Like, where was it excavated from?
We acquired the tavern from the Whitnable family in Old Ashapan, which is north of Oconomowoc.
Okay.
And we kind of sliced it like a layer cake and drove it down here on the road, a couple of big trailers. And that's where it was. There was a house connected to it. So it was sort of like you could come in, ring a bell, and at certain times they'd come out and serve you a beer. But it's a small town. Everybody knew everyone. We brought it here and recreated it to that 1930s spec. They operated it until 1988, but they didn't really update it much. So we really got a building that feels like the 30s.
And what does it take to renovate something like that? I mean, obviously, it's been 3 or 4 years since I saw it. It was on the property, but it was not open to go into yet. So what does it actually take to renovate an 100-plus-year-old building?
Well, the first step was put it back together, get all the HVAC kind of up to modern standards, but then make everything else look as original as possible. We actually used the original wainscoting and things like that, match the color of the paints, match the floor tiles. So really 2 or 3 years of research followed by physical work and then followed by really like when you're in a theater, it felt like we were putting a set together. Felt like set design, finding all the little pieces to put like little pictures to tuck in the mirror and things like that. So it went from like a construction project to really a theater project. And now we're a functioning bar. We have a modern bar right behind the historic bar. We have modern bar equipment.
So opening night in May, what should we expect to see there?
May 17th, yeah, we'll open that whole weekend, 17th and the 18th. We'll have ribbon cuttings. We'll have some tap performances. We'll have all the features. There's some Easter eggs, if you see the phone on the wall, the historic phone, you probably want to pick it up if it rings and
do
the messages. Or see if you have to deliver a message to the bartender. And, of course, we'll have beer on tap. So we'll have 4 beers on draft plus other goodies Wisconsin snacks.
And the sausages. And
so, yeah, Steve's waiting for this.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, you've sold
exactly.
Steve. He's going to come
you
now
me at
because of the sausages. So as far
yeah,
as... So as far as what are the hours for the summer for Old World Wisconsin and for the tavern?
Yeah, so we are open in the summer. We're open Wednesday through Sunday, 10 to 4. That begins in June. But starting in May, we're open on the weekends, Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
10 to 4. But then the tavern won't open until May 17th.
All right, May 17th. Ribbon cutting,
mark
sausage,
that on your calendar.
Beers. Rob Novak.
And polka.
And polka.
Oh,
you miss you. Yeah. Oh, burying the lead. All right, Rob, thank you so much for joining us today.
You bet. Thank you, Kristen.
Rob Novak is the beer and brewing historian at Old World Wisconsin. Did I sell you?
The sausage,
do you want to go
love
with
sausage,
me?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if I'm going to go with you, but I certainly we'll go there at some point.
You have grandkids. Why don't you think they have fun at Old World Wisconsin? I love this kind of stuff.
I'm a fan of history, yes.
This is why I feel like you were poo-pooing me of being excited about this story.
I think you read me wrong on that. Mm. Work on that.
Work on my own projections? All right. Well, now that we've had some fun, we're going to go back to a story that is less fun after the bottom of the hour news. There has been an executive order back in March about eliminating the Institute of Museum and Library Services. So we are going to talk to a local library representative about how that could affect us here on Spanning the State. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry. Steve Scafidi is here with me. And did you know about this one? The federal funding for Wisconsin library systems might be at risk?
Yeah, I don't like that.
Did you know about it?
No.
Okay. See, there's a lot of things happening. It's hard to
keep up with
everything.
A lot of things I don't know. You should have said that.
That's true. But yes, President Donald Trump ordered the elimination of an agency that provides financial support for libraries nationwide. In a March 14th executive order, Trump directed the elimination of the Institute of Museum and Library Services. What does that mean? That was another institution. I don't know what it is. And so here to answer our questions is Deb Merritt, who is the Public Information Coordinator at Milwaukee County Federated Library System. That's a mouthful of
a
title.
Mouthful. Yes.
So what is the Institute of Museum and Library Services?
Yeah, this is a very small agency, about 75, 80 employees that most of us have never heard of. That provides mostly grant money for libraries and museums across the country. It is the only federal source of funding for libraries that we have. So the funds that come from them mostly are either one-off grants for mostly smaller libraries. If they've got a need for, let's say, 10 new computers and they don't have that kind of budget, they can apply for a grant. And this is the kind of money that would come in to help them keep up with technology, tie into the state interlibrary loan system, things like that. A lot of stuff that is kind of behind the scenes that isn't real visible to people, but that really makes a difference.
Anybody that goes to libraries, actively goes, I still have my library card at my desk at home because I love libraries and we have a great one in Oak Creek, understands the role that libraries play. And it's not just, you know, you take your little kids and they get a few books. It's something for everyone. That's the thing that I think people miss in the story.
Absolutely. The importance of libraries actually is rising more and more these days. They've really become community hubs for everybody. Everyone can come in. They're warming and cooling centers. They provide computer literacy courses, all kinds of programming for all ages, a lot of job resource help and training. It just goes on and on.
And so can you give us some examples of either any of our local libraries that was a recipient of some of these grants?
I was just trying to put it together
as far as like, oh, we got my library got this thing because of this federal agency.
You have to check into each individual library. I don't have information on it. We have 383 libraries in the state. That might be recipients of these kinds of things. And like I said, it's going to be different every year depending on the library's needs. But these particular funds tend to disproportionately help the little rural libraries who don't have a budget for much beyond just the books that are in their walls.
You're obviously biased when we talk about libraries, but I think it's still important when you're a subject matter expert to explain to people, in your own words, why libraries are so important in our daily lives.
Yeah. Well, actually, I want to say, first of all, I think everybody is biased for libraries. Libraries are very nonpartisan entity in our country, in our state, in our cities. we have always enjoyed and deeply appreciated really good support from the state legislature and from the federal legislature as far as funding and support goes. So everybody loves their libraries.
The libraries pull well.
I would imagine
they pull
very well.
Yeah. So it's just a place where you can always go. It's free. Where can you go and sit for free and get free Wi-Fi and free information and, you know, books and music and movies and so much.
And some of the most helpful people you ever want to meet.
Yes.
We're talking about customer service skills. The best. But also the thing that surprises people, all the different services they provide. Some of the stuff I didn't even know.
It's astonishing.
Until I got more involved. It's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. You mentioned the Oak Creek Library, which is a newer one of our libraries. Mm-hmm. They have a video gaming room that you can come with your friends and you can,
they've got
games there. You can bring your own. I mean, like, you wouldn't believe the kinds of things that our libraries offer for you.
Mm-hmm. So if this actually does go away, is there ways to make up for some of those grants? Is there other things that could replace it, or what happens?
Well, that is the big question right now. We don't know. This agency has been in place since 1997. And like I said, it's been well funded and non-controversial since then. So, we didn't really see this coming. So it remains to be seen what would happen. Initially, we would feel the impact. Especially at the state level, we kind of answer to the Department of Public Instruction, which also oversees the school system. They have people on staff that are specifically for the libraries, and they serve as resources for anything from gathering data and providing it to providing consultation sources. Most of those people's salaries are paid for by the IMLS. So if we lose those people, then each individual library would have to go out and hire a consultant or hire someone on staff to do that rather than have this pooled resource. So that's one of the things that people may not realize is that the IMLS funds actually make it more efficient and cost less money for your taxpayer dollars to get things done that the libraries have to do in order to be able to do them efficiently.
I hope that this funding gets reinstated, and I'm optimistic that it will, because I think one of the reasons we're talking about it is because I think people need to know this. But two, there are ways to help libraries in other fashions, and that's donations. Many of them have foundations or other fundraising opportunities. Find your community, find your local library, and ask them these questions. And, you know, we all have tight budgets, but we also are a giving country, state, and in our communities. And this is one of the really interesting, great ways to donate locally. I think it serves the public in so many different ways.
It really is. And I think you make a good point where, you know, we see things happening at the federal level, and it's so far beyond our immediate lives so often. But the library is right there down your street, making a difference in your life if you want it to, and it's definitely something worth investing in.
Now, we should say that Attorney General Josh Call has joined 20 other states for the lawsuit to block this from happening.
Yes.
Do we have any other updates beyond just there is a lawsuit?
They just made that announcement, and I don't know if the number is complete even of how many states are going to be a part of it. So we are obviously going to be watching that closely and have hope, and we're very glad to be a part of it.
Anything else people should be aware of or things that they can do to help?
We just want people to know that it's out there, and we want people to communicate that this is important to you. We the people have the power in this country, right? So we need to let our legislators know what's important to us. So we are really encouraging people to reach out to your representatives and let them know why the library is important to you. We actually have created a website where you can go for more information. It's mywisconsinlibrary.org.
Okay.
Nice and easy.
Very easy.
There's all kinds of information on that page, and there are links you can follow. It will help you find your representatives to call them. It'll explain all of this in much more detail. And it'll help you get started on helping support your library.
Amazing.
Thanks for your passion on this. I love the fact that it's like everybody I meet that works in a library is like the same way. They all have that same goal, desire, passion. That's why they work.
It's a great job, I got to tell you.
I know.
One more question. Have you been in any of the Milwaukee Public Library TikTok videos?
I have not been in any of them, but I watch
many
them.
Many have gone
fervently.
Viral. Yes, they are amazing. One of my favorite stories, because there's no like digital social media person. It's all of just the creativity from the staff.
Having fun. Yeah, if anybody out there, you need to watch the MPL TikTok or Instagram.
Your Instagram.
Same. Yeah, yes, it's incredible.
If you don't want TikTok. Yep. All right, Deb Merritt, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thank you so much for
having me. Say the website one more time.
MyWisconsinLibrary.org.
Perfect. She is the Public Information Coordinator at Milwaukee County Federated Library System. And we'll be back with more after this.
I'm getting hungry, I can tell you that.
I thought you already had lunch.
I did. It was a salad, though. You know, I'm eating healthier now.
You are?
Yeah. Well, the podcast, I got to look good against your skinny frame, so it adds like 30 pounds to my weight, so I got to be conscious of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was a good salad.
Did you hear about the boss, your guy? The news?
What's the news?
The news is he's going to release 7 Lost
I did hear that news.
Albums
yes.
spanning 35 years. They're going to drop June 27th.
I hope that in that mix of albums, there's some of the stuff he recorded with Bob Seger many, many years ago that never got released. I'd love to hear that.
Maybe that's part of it.
I hope so.
So seven new albums coming in June, which is, I would imagine you're very excited about it.
I am.
But yeah, so I thought we would, you know, 83 tracks, most of which would have never been heard before.
And he's very hypercritical about his own music, so there's probably was a reason he didn't release them all the time. But when you get to this part of your life, you know, the end of life, sort of, senior citizen, and he is now, and he's, I think, 75.
And 70? He's 75, still and he's still performing live, considered one of the best live acts. And you saw him, what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think that was 2 years ago at the Pfizer Forum. And I love the fact that he's doing it on his own volition. He's not dead and someone's doing it afterwards, like they did with Prince, which he never released that stuff. And then his family released it, and it's not the great Prince that we all know. So I'm glad that he's doing this.
Wait, what do you mean? What happened with Prince?
Prince had
unheard songs
in his vault,
never released
at the Paisley Palace or whatever that place is called. And his family, as part of the, you know, the settling of his estate, released some of this stuff, and it wasn't like the final product.
Mm. Oh, so like the songs themselves, you were like, maybe they should have stayed in the vault.
Yeah, probably. Which is why
do you think some of these should stay in the vault?
I don't know. I haven't heard them yet. I hope not.
Think it's a money grab?
No, not Springsteen doesn't need the money. He's a billionaire.
It's a sign of a recession.
Yeah,
sign of
he's
recession
hurting
coming.
Now. It's coming, so he's doing something about that. He's being proactive.
Who's left on your bucket list as far as people you would love to see live?
U2. Haven't seen them. Okay. Love to see them. Bono, yeah. Is The Edge, is that his guitarist? I think so, right? Who else would be? I would have loved to see Neil Diamond because he doesn't tour anymore. I had a chance to see Frank Sinatra. I chose a Cubs game over a Frank Sinatra concert. I'd still kick myself in the head over that.
But so you did see Frank Sinatra?
I saw the Cubs, not St. Frank Sinatra. Oh. I had tickets for both. Chose the Cubs. Because I had a friend.
How old were you?
I don't know.
So it was a young and dumb decision, or?
No, I was probably late 20s, early 30s when he was still alive.
Borderline young and dumb.
Yeah, I was still young and dumb. A lot of people say I'm old and dumb, so.
That's true.
Dave from Racine, there you go.
It's a text line.
How about this for the text line?
Some texters love you. I feel like you might be the most divisive person on the station.
Which I'm fine with. I always want to leave with some love here. Kristen, this is from the text line 414. I enjoy the wide variety of topics you cover. Very informative. And I agree wholeheartedly.
Because I'm a nerd.
Well, whatever you are, I listened to your 2 o'clock hour yesterday from home as I was doing my very important research work at home. I don't even know what I was doing. And I listened to your 2 o'clock hour on sports. Blew me away.
Oh, thanks.
That was.
You had a good show yesterday.
It was brilliant radio. So thanks for doing that for all of us who are consumers of what you do.
Well, I do my dad. We try to highlight the things that I find interesting. So I'm glad other people find them interesting too.
Yeah.
All right. Let's come back and we'll do a little teaser for people who've been listening to our podcast because we're going to do a not so safe for work, this is a topic that can only be on the podcast. So we'll come back, wrap things up and tell you what it is. I believe it's time for me to fly. All right, since we were just talking about the text line, we got a text from the 414 saying, Kristen, and they spelled my name right, which I love.
That's nice.
You are a breath of fresh air to the station and have even made me almost like Steve.
Oh,
almost.
How about that? So that was so pleasant when they got to the Steve part and messed it all up. But I appreciate you're at least moving in the right direction.
So speaking of more Steve, more Kristen, right now, once the show's done, we're going to go do our podcast.
To our podcast studio here at Good Karma Brands.
And I had pitched this story to you because I think it's very interesting. And it kind of goes in line with earlier this week, we had a documentary filmmaker on talking about the Gold Nugget in Spread Eagle, Wisconsin, which is a strip club.
Real place.
Near the UP on the border, talking about dancing and sex work. And I had sent you a story about a woman who was a musician and has now started an OnlyFans page, which is becoming a more common career choice because there is so much money to be made on this site.
And
it's not really a safe for radio or work conversation.
Adults only, I would say.
Yes. So we are saving it for the podcast. But I feel like I'm interested to see if there's a generational divide on this, if there's a gender divide on this. But basically, as far as a take on the world's oldest profession, and yet here we are, as far as it being one of the most profitable things specifically women can be doing right now.
Yeah, the oldest profession is never going to go away. And the interest in that oldest profession is never going to go away. And here is the, I think, the magic of OnlyFans or those types
the
of
magic.
Sites. Well, so I think for women, they are allowed to do this on their own terms. That's the difference, because women have been mistreated since time began.
Have been managed.
Managed and a lot of other things.
Yes.
So this is sort of a different look at that relationship issue.
Yeah. So this, we're going to go record now. It'll be out next week. And then you're not here tomorrow. You're doing your show with Bill and Joe tomorrow, but you will not be with
Tomorrow's
me tomorrow.
Thursday, so Friday. 2 days. Friday. You're ready to get this week over.
No, it's because I have a short show tomorrow because of the Brewers.
That's right.
That's probably why my brain is glitching out.
And
right
yes,
now.
I'm heading to Las Vegas very early on Saturday morning, where I'll be there until Tuesday late in the evening, and then I'll be back Wednesday.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks for joining me. I enjoyed having you here. Even if
I barged in, but
not.
You welcomed me with almost open arms. So
almost.
How about that?
All right, Wisconsin's Afternoon News is next.